for people who've only worked remote, they maybe never had the experience. Like that first time you go to lunch with the team and you just get to kind of see what they're all about. And normally you get somebody, whether it's the team lead or somebody else, to kind of poke you a little bit and tell your stories and just kind of connect a little bit more. And then that's what kind of unlocks them to be like, okay, I know this guy a little bit. I'm going to ask him for help. You know, he's not going to make fun of me or whatever.
From Tuple, this is Distributed, where we show how world-class engineers and their teams tackle the challenges of remote work. I'm Jack Hanna, your host. Let's get to the real work. Hey, everyone. Today, we're talking with Nick Cash, who's the Senior Vice President and Head of Technology at Jam City, a mobile games developer and publisher. Nick's been at Jam City for just over 9 years now and spent 10 years before that, mostly as a hands-on keyboard developer. And so, Nick, we're super excited to have you on the show.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Jam City has a particularly interesting org structure, and I think that will frame up the conversation kind of nicely. You've described it to me before, I think, as almost a hub and spoke model. Could you describe how the company is set up as a starting point and how the development teams work together?
At Jam City, we have a wide variety of games, like 20 plus games that we build and maintain and support. The way that we have it set up is that each kind of group of games is its own division at Jam City. So we have a narrative division, we have a collections division, we have a big puzzle division, we have a social casino division, and all of the different games are kind of those spokes, and those all kind of connect back to the hub, which is, you know, kind of corporate, if you want to think of it that way. All of the central teams that kind of support kind of all of the other functions at Jam City. So we're trying to give all the game teams as much autonomy and kind of creative freedom as they need to do what they need to do, while also making sure that the things that maybe aren't unique to each game are kind of more centrally supported, so that we're not kind of reinventing the wheel in every studio, if that makes sense.
How many total studios are there?
With the division structure, I think we have 5 divisions. Inside of those, we have kind of different studios that kind of span the whole globe. So we have developers in Berlin, we have developers in Buenos Aires and Montevideo. We obviously have a lot of developers here in the US. We have developers in Canada. We have a lot of different teams in different locations, different time zones, all trying to work productively together.
What's the broader team's approach to remote versus in-person, hybrid work, all that good stuff?
So we actually kind of have a hybrid approach in a lot of cases here still, although we are a remote-first company. We still have a number of offices in a number of different places, and we still love getting the value of in-person communication and collaboration and all of that. But as a remote-first company, we're very used to hopping on a call with anybody and everybody across the company and across a lot of different time zones. So that's definitely a challenge that we face on a daily basis. But we've tried to kind of normalize in-person collaboration and balancing that with the broader team at large, and just make it as easy as possible to connect either asynchronously or synchronously on any and all problems that we're facing with all the tools that you might expect, including Tuple.
Yeah, well, we're happy to serve you, obviously. So what are some of the things that Jam City does to support the team in working together, given the fact that it's remote first, but, you know, mostly hybrid setup across the globe?
One of my goals is always trying to remove as much friction as possible. So making sure people have access to the same calendars, the same video calls, the same tool set. The investment in tools and collaboration and communication is kind of a key to making everything function. Making it easy for people to know how and where to kind of participate and communicate, I think, is kind of key to making everything go smoothly and taking out all the guesswork. So something that we're always talking about is, what's the purpose of this Slack channel? And, you know, what's the purpose of this meeting? And trying to make sure that people know when they have questions where they're supposed to be elevated to hit kind of the right group of people. I think with a remote company, at least for us, one of the things that we're kind of seeing is like kind of trying to optimize for the flow of communication and the flow of work. I think prioritizing that in our process has been really important to kind of seeing the results that we wanted to achieve.
Yeah. Do you have any specifics of that process you can share to help illustrate what you mean?
Sure. Yeah. There's something that we talk about a lot, at least on my team, which is the central technology group, which is just kind of the product lifecycle in general. And this is something that we found that I think is pretty universally applicable. where, you know, defining the problem and then solving the problem are potentially kind of two different steps with a lot of intersections. You need kind of different people kind of involved in both, but you do need each side to kind of be aware. Really, what I'm always looking for is just like optimizing for time to feedback and time to value and time to delivery, and trying to adjust our processes to achieve that regardless of which group you're in. So we're not super rigid about how every team operates so much as they're thinking about what is the value of their work and how is it delivered and who needs to kind of participate in that process. So I would say kind of every team's a little bit unique. We kind of have the same scaffolding in terms of kind of the loop that we're trying to go through with each team. But I think we're really trying to get better at defining the problems that we're trying to solve and make sure we're pushing, like getting as much horsepower on those problems and opportunities as possible, and really trying to make that loop as tight as possible. And sometimes just how much easier it is to get on a call for 5 minutes and solve the problem versus, you know, 4 hours across 1,000 Slack messages.
Yeah. I happen to know that you care quite a bit about facilitating connections between people. And you talked about that a little bit, about making sure that you're optimizing for time to feedback, time to delivery, ensuring a greater degree of communication earlier in the process. Why does that stuff matter to you?
At the end of the day, any of the work that we do that doesn't translate into value wasn't meaningful. Typically, especially with the Central Technology Group, a lot of our customers are internal. And we don't want to overbuild, we don't want to underbuild. And a lot of the times when you're working, particularly with internal customers, the way that you know whether you're kind of right on the money is just to talk to your customer more. Thankfully, when they're internal, you know, they're just one call away, they're one click away usually. So one of the things that we're just always looking at is like, how do we remove that friction and how do we normalize getting people to talk to each other and interact? When everything's remote, I think it's easy to kind of get into the mode of async communication by default. And in some ways, I think that makes it slow. And it's one of the things that I love about Tuple and other kind of collaboration tools that kind of encourage people just to actually talk to each other. My team hears me talk about this all the time, so I'll subject you to it too. Businesses are about people. Fundamentally, it's about your customers, it's about your team, it's about the vendors who support you. The whole reason we're here doing what we're doing is to provide value to each other. And there's no better way to figure out whether you're delivering that value than to talk to your customers as often as makes sense. You know, you don't want to annoy people, but when you're building something for somebody, they're going to give you the most value and the best feedback about whether you what you've done really solved the problem that you were trying to solve. So kind of everywhere I go, I feel like I'm always talking about this of like, who are you talking to? How often do you talk to them? How is that baked into your process? I think we've found over time, the teams that are most siloed and the teams that deliver least frequently and interact with their customers least frequently tend to have kind of worse results. So to the extent that it's productive, we're always looking at trying to get people to talk more and kind of wait less, if that makes sense.
What are you doing to encourage folks to communicate synchronously more often?
Yeah, I mean, that kind of comes back to the process and trying to bake it in. You know, with my group, we try and meet kind of monthly at least with all of the different divisions inside of the company. I think we're kind of like the bloodstream of Jam City that kind of connects all the different organs together and make sure everybody gets what they need. And sometimes that's tech, sometimes that's just connections with the rest of the company. Sometimes, yeah, it can take a lot of different forms with my group. But meeting at least monthly with every customer, doing weekly conversations for the teams that need more attention, for the products that are the closest to launching, and also just kind of reminding people that like processes don't need to be set in stone forever. The context of this situation is different than it was a quarter ago or a year ago, and that we should be flexible in our thinking, and the demands of the business and the situation that we're in should be reflected, and it should be easy to amend our processes. You know, I think the more we kind of prioritize communication, the kind of less prescriptive and the less heavy lifting and the less rules and the less, you know, kind of burden I think we end up with overall. I think most dev teams have been in a situation where they've had a pull request that gets 1,000 comments that, you know, if we had two developers who just sat and talked about it for a couple of minutes, we probably could have sorted through it. you don't need as much process if people can actually talk to each other. I guess that's my premise here.
Have you seen any specific examples where that negative scenario you described takes place?
Unfortunately, yeah. I feel like I've not only seen it, but also been part of it. A lot of my career was being on the dev side. And one situation that really sticks out to me, this was a number of years ago now at GM City, but we had a dev team who's working on a new product down in Buenos Aires, which is where we have a good chunk of our company and crew down there. And it was with a lead developer who I hadn't met. And I felt like we just never quite were on the same page when we were working together on Slack. How you say something also matters. And that when you're working with asynchronous communication tools, especially with text, it's just your expressions, you know, your intent do not always come across. So what you say and how you say it matters a lot. And we had a situation where it kind of became adversarial in a way that, like, I don't think either side meant. And so we were talking about how we were going to collaborate on this feature. And they had mentioned, you know, if the central team couldn't deliver it, that was fine. They would just fork it, which then we were like, no, don't fork it. That's not how we want to do it. And eventually, like a month later or something, I had gotten the chance to fly down and meet that entire team in person. And the vibe of that project totally changed. And that was kind of a big wake-up call for me of like, oh, okay, you know, text isn't always the answer. And how you communicate in text is very different than how you might communicate on a call like we're doing or in person. And I think that always stuck with me. So now I'm always trying to figure out how do I get my teams to talk to each other? How do I get them to interact, whether that's in like specifically about a work project or not? Because I think even people just meeting one or two times, either in person or on a call, to just kind of be who they are, I think it makes everything else so much easier. And I think we've seen over and over again, if we can invest a little bit in the relationships, that we see way better outcomes for the projects. And a lot of that comes back to me with that experience where like spending 2 or 3 days with that team solved all the communication problems, which just blew my mind at the time.
Yeah, well, how do you think about that going forward, acknowledging that you have a global team and getting together in person all of the time is not something that's possible? So how do you go about harnessing the value of synchronous and sometimes in-person communication when you can't always get together in person?
Yeah. So part of the strategy for me is to see, you know, even if we can't do it frequently, can we at least make it happen every once in a while? Sure. And I think something that we've seen a lot with companies with remote first culture is giving the chance for people to meet at least occasionally. So that's something that I'm still interested in. Like you said, it's not always possible, particularly with a global team that spans a lot of countries and time zones and products and everything. But then also really trying to bake into the culture and again, the process, like the chance for people to connect frequently without it being in like an intense situation. It's like one of my fears in my role always is like the first time somebody interacts with me is like when something's broken in production or there's some sort of crisis going on and then I show up. My goal with all of our teams is always to like get to know them, let them get to know me and make sure that nobody's afraid to kind of talk to anybody else to help resolve the situation or to tackle the opportunities that we're facing. So that, you know, results in, I think, a number of programs that we've kind of tried to build a GM City to kind of get people just to spend a little bit more time interacting, talking to each other. We build video games, so like it should be fun. You know, can we you know, bake that into our flow, whether that's playing games together or, you know, just taking the time to chat. I'm a big fan of coffee chats. I do a ton of one-on-ones and I honestly like find them to be some of the most valuable things that I spend my time on because it's always interesting to kind of connect the dots across the organization of people who might need to meet and don't know each other, kind of connect people to opportunities. So, I would say, honestly, talking to people might be the most important thing I spend my time on.
I believe it, especially in your role. I mean, one of the things that you've shared with me in the past is that you've observed a lot of folks are almost afraid to ask for help before it's too late. And I'm wondering if you could expand on that a bit.
Back in the day, for people who worked in an office, so we would hire junior engineers and we would sit them with their team. We would have the junior engineers kind of constantly, not annoying the senior engineers, but, you know, asking a lot of questions. And we would kind of have to train all the junior engineers where we're like, hey, we hired you to be a problem solver. You know this more than you think. So like, try a little bit more and, you know, draw the line at like, if you don't know the answer, you feel stuck and you've really tried for 30 minutes, 60 minutes, something like that, then start asking for help. But like, it doesn't need to be continuous, you know, minute by minute, you know, what do I do with this? What do I do with that? So we kind of had to tone them down a little bit in the office, and so that the senior engineers could also do their work. What we have now, where when we're remote first, particularly with kind of the younger generation, we see a reluctance to reach out. And when you don't know anybody, you know, Slack is also daunting. Video calls are also daunting if you don't know the people well at your company and you haven't had the chance to talk. So now we're kind of almost in the opposite scenario where, like, particularly with the younger engineers, we're always saying, like, after 30 to 60 minutes, ask for help, you know? Like, don't sit here and suffer alone. We're here to work on this together. So make sure you're doing your work, but do not sit stuck for days. The worst case scenario for me is somebody who is totally demoralized because they've been stuck on the same problem for several days and just didn't know how to ask for help.
How would you categorize the reason why folks aren't asking for help sooner in the remote context?
I think it's just normal human nature. You start a job and you don't know who everybody is. And for people who've only worked remote, they maybe never had the experience of like that first time you go to lunch with the team and you just get to kind of see what they're all about. And normally you get somebody, whether it's the team lead or somebody else, to kind of poke you a little bit and tell your stories and just kind of connect a little bit more. And then that's what kind of unlocks them to be like, okay, I know this guy a little bit. I'm going to ask him for help. You know, he's not going to make fun of me or whatever. And like, how do you get those interactions to happen in a remote setting? It kind of has to happen by design, at least from my perspective. It's like most teams don't organically just end up with that, or at least we didn't. You know, we went from being kind of semi-remote pre-COVID to full remote with COVID. And when I say semi-remote, I mean we had offices and then the offices had to interact. So like, we've always had a remote culture in the sense that we were always kind of coordinating across studios, but you still often worked locally with your team in person. And so when you're a remote first company, like, you really have to figure out, and I think explain, particularly to people who've never done it before, like, here's who your team is. Here's how you can interact. Here's what the channels are. You know, here's kind of what goes where. You have to be pretty explicit about it and encourage people to kind of take advantage of it. And the more you do it, the easier it gets. But it is like a training and a cultural thing. If you get a team that doesn't like to have their cameras on and only talks via Slack, then that's what your new people learn. And if you want teams that kind of prioritize connections and talking to each other, then you kind of have to bake it into the culture and the process.
Yeah, well, it's a tough thing to do, I think, for two reasons. One, there's certainly the stereotype that a lot of developers strongly prefer that solo time to get into flow, to do work, and to get on with it. And I think the flip side is a lot of managers would also argue that having each person neatly working on their own little thing allows the throughput to move faster. And so why do you have such high conviction that folks working together, collaborating, talking synchronously more often actually makes a difference and is something that you should strive for?
I feel like this is like an eternal debate that engineering has always had, like whether it was remote or not. I think just throughout my own personal experience, all the teams that kind of talked the most would perform the best. I also kind of fondly remember the era where like we used to go to lunch just about every day. In the morning, we would do stand-ups and we would talk about what our plan for the day was. And at lunch, we'd just sit and chat and we'd solve all the hardest problems at lunch together, where it's like, hey, I have this ticket. I don't know exactly what I'm going to do about it. Here's what I was thinking. What do you guys think? And, you know, we're sitting, chatting and going through that together, not even in a super explicit way, just kind of gathering thoughts from each other. And then we kind of come back from lunch and we sit down and do it. And we built entire video games that way, pretty much. So I guess I've seen it work. And that's my thesis, is that in my own experience and in my observation, that tends to be true, that the teams that communicate the best also have the best output. That's not to say asynchronous tools aren't useful. You know, I think GitHub is amazing. The fact that you can submit your pull requests at, you know, 2 a.m. when you're done feverishly coding it, and then walk away and know that your team will have a chance to take a look in the morning while you're still sleeping is always helpful. I don't think there's any argument that text-based tools still absolutely required as part of your day-to-day flow. But I think it's the teams that kind of get out of balance that become the issue. So I think it kind of takes all different methods. I would also say I've worked with a lot of engineers who I think are that way, where they're like, I'm heads down. I don't need to collaborate. I don't need to be in this meeting, yada, yada, yada. And eventually they're also unhappy. That's kind of my experience over time, is that a lot of times those engineers, they don't feel connected. They don't feel supported. They often have great ideas that they have trouble, you know, kind of getting traction on. And that's because they kind of opt out of the people piece. I guess one piece of advice I would give to all the engineers, like, you got to be able to talk to people. That's a huge part of making everything go. And you might be surprised at how much tech debt or personal, you know, projects that you're passionate about you can accomplish if you can kind of make the case instead of just kind of doing them on the down low in the dark, secret, you know, behind closed doors without any tickets to track them.
Well, speaking of unhappiness, I'm curious what the toughest part of being remote has been for you personally.
The thing that's hardest for me personally is just getting to know people. In an office, it's super easy just to bump into somebody and have a conversation, or to have an event that's kind of explicitly designed to kind of cross-pollinate between groups. In a remote setting, and particularly after COVID, I kind of was like, I've been at this company for a long time, and there's a lot of people that I don't know. And how do I get to know those people? That's like a weirdly hard problem that kind of takes more effort to fix and solve than you might think, particularly when it spans different time zones, different countries, different projects. Getting all those teams to kind of interact and even just know about each other is hard. And I remember having an experience when I was a lead engineer in one of our games, and there's so much going on. You just don't have the time to pay attention to the ecosystem at large and what everybody else is doing. And our top crash, while we were looking at it on the game, was already solved by a different team in the company, and I just didn't know about it. And I was like, how? There should be a solution here, right? Like, somebody, either I need to be more connected, or somebody else should have been able to connect the dots for us here. Like, how does this happen? So yeah, I think it's just like, how do you connect with people? How do you know who you have access to for in terms of expertise? We have to kind of be smart and intentional with how we approach that.
Do you have any advice? Like, have you, having thought that through a decent amount and struggled with it for that matter, what conclusions have you arrived at for what to do about it, if any?
Yeah. Something that we've seen success with at Jam City has been just trying to shine the spotlight more broadly, whether that's through company-wide all hands or division-wide all hands, or through newsletters or whatever you're using to kind of communicate across your company, to kind of highlight people and highlight projects, and really, I think, just celebrate more of what's going on. One of the things that I think has been most interesting is a program that we started that's called Jam City University. And one of the goals of this is just to say, like, here's somebody who has an extreme amount of expertise in something, whether that's like, here's how I use my Mac more effectively, or here's how we saved a whole bunch of money on our cloud infrastructure, or here's how we're improving our A/B testing, you know, all these different things. Just giving them the spotlight and the microphone and letting people kind of talk about it and normalizing that and baking it into the process, I think, has been super helpful. And that just gives you the chance to kind of see what else is going on at the company, who else is working on these different problems, and who else might you want to connect with. So like, the show and tell piece is one. The other one is like, if you have kind of super connectors in your organization, and I think organizations always have this, where like, you know, somebody who like knows everybody else, where that's through their job function or just who they are, getting those people to kind of play matchmaker a little bit and kind of give them the space to do that, I think is always super helpful. So something that we've seen, again, kind of on the personnel training piece, is a lot of different teams, every team's looking at how they level up. You know, how do we do our jobs better? How do we do training? How do we get people the resources that they need? You know, this is key to every team and every company. And that means, I think, that there's a lot of overlapping thought from passionate individuals who may not know about each other, because this team's using this tool and this team's using this tool. And maybe this team's talking about engineering, but this team's talking about analytics or something. And like, how do you get those two people who are like really passionate about that to connect? And sometimes it takes somebody who's like one step up, who's like, hey, you guys need to talk to each other. And so I think the show and tell piece is one, but I think also kind of the intentional matchmaking is another. There's always at least a handful of kind of these super connector people that I think you can just kind of empower and say, like, part of your job is to make these connections for the company, to encourage everybody to take the time and have the space to just kind of have those sorts of connections get made. Because that's where a lot of the magic happens, frankly. The other thing, if you're an engineer, or really across the board, but especially in engineering, if you kind of take the positive intent seriously, and every time you see another group, like, be curious about what they're doing. This tends to be pretty easy for engineers if they're a little more people-oriented. So if you can kind of get over the hump of talking to people, then you can use this phrase, which is just, tell me more.
Yeah.
And if you just employ that everywhere, and if you're just kind of innately curious and you want to know what's going on, people love to talk about what they're working on and how they solve problems. So I would say anytime you kind of meet a peer, just get them going and say, tell me more about what you're doing or how you solved it. Very rarely, in my experience, does anybody ever turn you down. So as you kind of bump into different individuals, I think that's a good way to kind of just build your network, especially if you're not sure what to talk about. Just ask them what they're working on and just keep saying, tell me more. I think that'll eventually kind of take you where you want to go. But it does involve a level of curiosity and willingness to kind of go through the discomfort of talking to people you don't know about things you may not understand.
What's the biggest thing that you've gained personally from being in this remote setup?
I know opportunity is one of the things that I had highlighted. You know, I live in Cedar Falls, Iowa. I work as head of technology for a tech company. That's a pretty unique sort of setup that I think is not super common. We have great internet here, by the way, for anyone who's listening. But yeah, I think the opportunity piece is certainly been unique to my journey. And I would say, you know, big shout out and credit to Jam City for being pretty forward thinking and ahead of its time, where back in the day when I started, the idea was, where's the talent that we need and how do we get access to it? And I think the world's kind of just catching up to that thinking. And so Jam City's kind of had a long head start, which is like, hey, there's good talent everywhere. The ability to kind of give everybody a chance was important to me in my journey. And I think it's something that we kind of continue to see across all of the remote companies, is that they're really expanding, I think, where engineering can be practiced. And to me, that's kind of partly the dream that the internet was always supposed to deliver. Because one of the things that I think is maybe also underrated is, it's just as easy to get a hold of me for anyone on my team as it is for anyone else, or to get a hold of our CEO, or to get a hold of each other. And so when I'm thinking about, like, hey, you know, I've got this new project, who do I give it to? And the answer is, I can give it to whoever is most capable, most interested, regardless of where they sit. And we're talking more about skill set and ambition and, you know, timelines and all that stuff, you know, all that's still in there. But it's not, you know, somebody in the Iowa office has to do this, or somebody in the San Francisco office has to do this. When I say that opportunity is a little bit more equally distributed, I also mean it in that sense. So that one engineer who might be an outlier, who's sitting in Indiana or whatever, he gets the same access to the same problems as the rest of our crew. And I think that's pretty special. But yeah, I think just having the ability to call up your boss or your boss's boss on a whim is maybe not utilized enough. And so I like the ability to be accessible to everybody.
Well, yeah, to challenge you on that, don't you think it's easier to make yourself appear accessible when you have the chance to meet folks in person?
Yeah, so I definitely understand that argument too. I definitely recognize that the people who are the most visible often get, you know, the most attention. And that's one of those cases where, again, kind of like, the people who communicate the best still are probably going to end up with the most opportunity. But one of the things that remote kind of gives you is the fact that if you're not as good in person, or maybe it's less easy for you to get to an office, or you have very serious other life considerations, you know, remote kind of levels the playing field for you in a lot of ways. So it doesn't take away necessarily all of the barriers. It doesn't change kind of, I think, the fundamental human nature of working. it does maybe remove some of the rough edges. So I definitely agree with that argument. But I do think it's also maybe, I would hope, easier for managers to find and give some attention to those who are maybe a little more quiet in a remote setting. Maybe that's not true. Maybe that's just my optimism. But I think if people are in an office, it's easy for the loud ones to really soak up a lot of the oxygen. And in a remote setting, it's a little bit easier to find your sunlight and grow.
Yeah, I appreciate the optimism. And that reminds me actually of something that somebody else I was chatting with and interviewing for the show said, Callie Buruchara. She was sharing that one of the benefits of remote communication, even over video, is the fact that it's lower fidelity. Because if you are somebody who gets anxious or nervous about having difficult conversations or any conversation at all, because you have less incoming to process, you're probably going to feel more comfortable in that interaction. For example, I think the example she gave is, I can't tell whether or not you're nervously tapping your foot or doing something with your hands that suggests you want to get the heck out of this conversation, that then makes me have some internal self-talk that makes me uncomfortable and ends the conversation proactively. And so I do think that there is something to be said about this type of communication feeling more accessible than in-person communication for a certain type of individual. That is quite cool and not something I had thought about before until Callie mentioned that to me.
Yeah, I think it's a great example, and I 100% agree and kind of support that. Some people just present better and are more comfortable. And for certain people, it's just going to be easier to talk over a video call, to have certain conversations, or just to engage in general. Maybe they're working up to kind of everything else, and that kind of opens the door for them. So, I think there's a lot of power for that. And, you know, I think we get a lot of the value without as many of the downsides by doing kind of remote communication in this style. But again, I'm kind of an all of the above sort of guy. Like, I think text chat has its place, video calls has its place, meeting a person has its place. It's once it's all out of balance that we start to see problems.
Yeah, no doubt. And finding that balance is tough, but it's, I think, something we're all trying to figure out. What's one question about remote work that you don't really have the answer to yet?
What's the difference between getting on a call to like just work on something versus having a meeting? And I think I'm still kind of split on this, where like it seems almost universal amongst engineers where like I want less meetings. But then, you know, hopping on a call to work through a problem, not that different. But it's like, okay, if I tell you when I come back from lunch, we're going to get on a call and we're going to talk about X. Is that a meeting? Is that not a meeting? Are we working through a problem? It just seems like there's some psychology here that I just don't understand about human nature and like why people dislike meetings. And I think it's tied up to agenda and expectations, number of participants. There's a lot to it. But it's always interesting to me, you know, I'll have people on my team say, I looked at your calendar and it makes me terrified or sad or something. And I'm like, I get that. It's rigorous. Don't get me wrong. But a lot of the stuff on there is like, I'm meeting with this person about this problem, I'm meeting with this person about this problem. You know, we're working through real things. And to me, some of it's just like, we're being intentional about how we're doing the work. Maybe it's less about having a meeting. I think for all of us still to understand about what meetings are good and worthwhile and what's just collaboration, there's something still, I think, to kind of unpack there, because we talk a lot about, you know, process in meetings and people's disdain or like, you know, just enough meetings, just enough process. You know, that's the goal that we're always kind of trying to talk about. But people are always happy to kind of get on the call and work through their problems. And to me, that's, you're still meeting with somebody. So I don't know. That's a quandary. If your day is full of, you know, calls and that's the work you were expecting to do, is that a problem? I'm not sure that it is, but some people think so.
Yeah, there's definitely a psychology or positioning component of that that doesn't totally make sense to me, but is also consistent with my experience, where folks absolutely distaste the idea of being in meetings all day, but would be somewhat open to spending several hours in a row working through a problem, be it formal pair programming or just casual, you know, working through a problem together. That is a good
I've
one.
Had that exact experience with my team where it's like, if we were at somebody's desk just working on this together and we spent all day on it, nobody would have a complaint. But if we do it on a call, then people are like, oh, this meeting is taking forever. Why are we all here? And I'm like, okay, guys, we gotta figure out a middle road here, or a middle ground.
Well, thank you so much, Nick, for being generous with your time and perspective. It's always a pleasure catching up. What's one thing you hope listeners take away from this conversation?
I mean, I said it, I think, a million times already, but, connect more, I think, is what business is all about. And the more communication you get, the more value you're going to get and deliver. So don't be afraid to talk to each other. The world needs more collaboration.
Yeah, I like that. And if folks want to connect with you or Jam City for that matter, where should they go?
Yeah, you can hit up jamcity.com or hit me up on LinkedIn if you want to connect. Feel free to reach out. Always happy to talk to people. So looking forward to it. And thanks for your time, Jack. I really appreciate the conversation.
Thanks for joining us on Distributed. If you want to learn more about what we covered in this episode, or if you want to share your own thoughts, follow @Tuple on X or visit distributed.fm.